I'll try to be brief, like I said. When I first handed this out, I thought I had explained myself, but apparently, for some at least, not quite as well as I should have. And that is, I am not saying that this is the last word on the subject. This is just one man's opinion, a man who's very respected, John MacArthur, a man who uses this for the most part in his church, the plurality of elders, the likes of that. And there are so many other ideas or people speaking about it, maybe even confusing the issue sometimes. So I just thought, and this is more complete than any other one that I've seen. I bought a bunch of them, passed them out, and so forth. Some have apparently thought I was saying that this is the last word on the subject, that we are to follow this absolutely right down the letter, down the line, letter by letter, and so forth. And that is not my position at all. Much could be said, but when it comes to church polity, there are a couple of different ways that we go. And I don't believe any of them work 100% of the time. For instance, there's the regulative and the normative. Most Reformed subscribe to, at least to some degree, the regulative, and basically what that means is, you know, whatever the Bible says, we believe, we go with, and so forth. The normative, briefly, more or less, anything goes as long as the Bible doesn't forbid it. Then, beyond that, when it comes to, again, church polity, how things are governed, how it's worked out, and so forth, there are three basic forms in non-Roman churches: the Episcopal, the Presbyterian, and the Congregational. Historically, Baptists have been Congregational. What I mean by that is that, in a sense, majority rules. Back in the days of the colonies, if I remember correctly, 9 of the first 13 colonies had what we would call today a state church. And you had to have their permission to preach. The Baptists obviously didn't pay attention to that, and consequently many were arrested, fined, beaten, any number of things. But during this period of time, Patrick Henry offered to defend these Baptist preachers in court at no cost to them as long as they would let him sit in on their business meetings. Patrick Henry said that the Baptist business meetings was the most perfect form of democracy that he was aware of. Basically, what it was, the Bible is like our Constitution, and whatever it says, you know, we do not have the liberty to change it, modify it, whatever. And whatever the Bible doesn't say, then we do have liberty. And so when it comes to this thought, this idea of the plurality of elders and so forth, obviously I'm not going to argue every point. The term elder and pastor are primarily of Jewish origin, and bishop is primarily of Gentile origin. The early church, made up primarily of Jews, converted Jews, were very comfortable and used the words that are translated into the English, elder and or pastor. On the other hand, as the church matured, as time went on, as it became more and more Gentile, then the word bishop was used more and more. And for those that might argue, I would challenge you, Show me one single one of the early church fathers that ever used for themselves the title elder. They all, to my knowledge, used the term bishop. So we see a transition. We see a maturity, or whatever you might want to call it, throughout the church age. Again, as far as I can determine, by the end of the 2nd century, going into the 3rd century, for all practical purposes, the term elder was no longer used. Pastor continued to be used to some degree, but primarily bishop. That doesn't make it wrong. One wrong or one right. That's just the way things evolved. Now, let's see here. Again, MacArthur is often used, and I respect the man. I'm not criticizing him, but I'm just saying, you know, this is the way things are. When it comes to this subject of plurality of elders, John MacArthur is looked to more than any one man presently today. In this little booklet, page number 7, he says, in general usage, I prefer the term elder because it seems to be free of many of the connotations and nuances of meanings that have been imposed on both bishop and pastor by our culture. So he readily acknowledges a lot of this is a cultural issue. So he says he prefers elder, yet if you go on his website, you will find of the staff, there's 13 staff members, including him. Of those 13, 11 of them carry the title pastor. Not a single one of them carry the title elder. Now, why does he say he prefers it and doesn't use it? I don't know. But it's been recorded a number of years ago, MacArthur and Adrian Rogers had a somewhat friendly but heated debate on eldership. And MacArthur told Rogers that he needed to have elders. And he says, I've got them. We just don't call them elders. And he went on to say, well, you know, you are the pastor, you are the leader. There's supposed to be, you know, not one single one. Rogers was supposed to have said to him, John, are you trying to tell me that whatever you want in that church is not done or accomplished? John never answered him. Why? Everybody knows that John MacArthur is the head of that church. They just don't want to admit it. And it's unfortunate. But that's a small issue. In Ephesians chapter 4, verse 11, we're told the various offices that the Lord has given to the church for the edification and so forth. And in the booklet it says here that Ephesians 4:11 is the only place in the King James Version where it is translated pastor. Every other time it appears in the Greek text, it is translated shepherd in the English versions. And that's not true. I don't know how many others are out there. I didn't look at them all. But the American Standard, the New American Standard, the NIV, they all say pastor, teacher. And so when you look at MacArthur's website, his picture, his name, and his title, pastor, teacher, right straight out of Ephesians 4:11. What I want to do now is to show a little bit in, let me see here, Acts chapter 6. Verse 2. Then the 12 called the multitude of the disciples unto them and said, it is not reason that we should leave the word of God and serve tables. Okay? The multitude of the disciples. Disciples, learners, students. Basically, they were addressing the whole church. Verse number 3. Wherefore, brethren, look ye out among you seven men. Talking to them all. Brethren. Not a class of any one individual people or whatever. Verse number 5. And the saying pleased the whole multitude. And they chose Stephen, so on and so forth. Folks, this is the congregational position. The apostles at this time instructed them what to do, and the majority, the multitude, took the position doing what they were told to do and so forth. Not one individual, not a small group of leaders that would eventually or later be called elders, but the whole multitude took part in this. And many of those, I won't say all, but many of those that adapt the plurality of elder polity do not have the congregation taken part. In MacArthur's church himself, it's the elders that virtually make all the decisions, votes, and so forth. Well, the size of the church he's got, if you had 8,000 people in a business meeting, you'd never get done. I mean, I can see why he does it. But the biblical principle is congregational. So if I go over to chapter 15, here we have James. We have the Church of Jerusalem, and let's see here. And then all the multitude kept silence and gave audience to Barnabas and Paul, declare it, and so on and so forth. All right? And after they held their peace, James answered, saying. So James is the moderator. You can call him a pastor, whatever you want. In verse number 19, wherefore my sentence is, when they were taught by the apostles what position they were to take on this subject, James, calling the meeting to order, you might say, James is the one who made the declaration, the decision, or however you might want to call it. Not elders, not a vote, and so forth. James was the leader of that church. The pastor of that church. And he made the decision and then makes the declaration in verse number 20. But that we write unto them, the church as a whole, the leadership, however you might want to word it. I don't want to elaborate on it. Verse 22. Then pleased it the apostles and elders with the whole church. So again, congregational. They're all in on this. Everybody. 23, and they wrote letters by them after this manner. So they made the decision to write the letter, to send it out, that they were not to treat the Gentile believers differently than the Jewish believers, so on and so forth. And then verse 25, it seemed good unto us, being assembled with one accord. Over and over and over, the very first church. If we use the law of first mention, we would have to say that this is the way a local church is to operate. A moderator, a general consensus, an agreement of vote, all of them involved. I'm not going to, again, labor it, but it was all done under the leadership of one man. If we turn to Timothy, I better do it rather than just take it off the top of my head. Now, I might seem a little bit, loud. I don't mean it in an obnoxious, domineering type way. I'm just speaking from my heart. Paul writing to Timothy, he says in verse number 3, chapter 1, "As I besought thee to abide still at Ephesus, when I went into Macedonia," so on and so forth. Paul put Timothy in charge at Ephesus. Paul was the one that ordained Timothy while they were in Macedonia, and then gave him that responsibility in Ephesus to be the leader. He says, "Where in 2 Timothy 1:6, wherefore I put thee in remembrance, that thou stir up the gift of God," and so on and so forth. Again, one man was put in charge. One man was put in authority. We turn over to Titus for the sake of time. I'm not going to go there. But Paul left Titus in Crete once again to lead and to set in order. If we flipped over to 1 Peter chapter 5, Peter speaks to the elders in the plural. But you go back to chapter 1, and it's got to be plural because he's writing to more than one church. Now, there may be more than one elder in each one of those churches, but we don't know that for a fact. I wouldn't make a big issue out of it. If we go to the book of Revelation, chapter 2 and 3, each one of the churches, or be it the angel of the church, at least in the KJV, is being addressed. Angel meaning messenger, not necessarily angelic. Now, here again, I was quite surprised. The number of commentators that don't touch it with a 10-foot pole. But those that do attempt to define what an angel means here, the vast majority take the position that it's in reference to the pastor. Now, some, they'll go along with that, but they'll still say something to the effect that, you know, it's a plurality of leaders and so forth. Yet, in every single one of those seven cases, that word is all in the singular. So whether it's pastor, whether it's elder, whether it's bishop, regardless, one, it's in the singular. Excuse me a second here. When in the early years of the church, again, when it was primarily Jewish, pastor and elder were absolutely the two most used terms for pastoral leaders, whatever their capacity. The word elder hung on a little bit longer, used throughout the church age from time to time. But when the church grew to be primarily Gentile, once again, bishop became the number one title. The early church, virtually all historians agree. I don't think there's any credible evidence contrary to it. The local church, by and large, were small house churches. Now you take Jerusalem. I said that James was in charge. Probably the most extreme estimate that I've read is the estimate that there was about 50,000 believers in Jerusalem. Well, there was no facility in all of Jerusalem that could have contained 50,000 people. So what you have is a house church here, one all around. And in each one of those house churches, there would be assigned, there would be ordained an elder. So within the church of Jerusalem, there would be a multitude of elders, each taking one of these little cottage churches. And so when it went on to the Gentile churches, much the same. Paul, when able, went first to the synagogue. And in a couple of cases, preached for a year and a half, 2 years, in the synagogue, before a church was started. Now some contend that some of the synagogues converted to churches. We don't know that for a fact. It was not until 313, when under Constantine, the Roman Empire, the Roman government, gave churches religious liberty, Christians religious liberty. Prior to that, some localities had a certain degree of liberty, but by and large, they could not meet in a crowd. They could not meet in their own building, property, or whatever you might want to call it. Now, the oldest church that we know of, that, you know, archaeological evidence has been found, is around 220 or so. But they're so rare, you don't find it in the history books. Archaeologists have not found it. So what am I getting at? Here again, once the Christians gained religious freedom, more and more they joined together, built, borrowed, rented, whatever, a large facility, and were in one location instead of these many, many house churches and so forth. And so it evolved. I'm not going to say it was right or wrong. I'm just saying it's a historical fact that with this edict giving the Christians freedom of worship, freedom of assembly, more and more they joined together under the leadership of one man. Again, read the history books. Bishop this, bishop that, bishop of, you know, by locality. So what am I getting at? I am not suggesting for a moment that MacArthur and those that, you know, advocate what he does, I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm saying if it works for you, go for it. But I'm also insisting that it's not an imperative that it has to be, because there are numerous New Testament examples where one man led the church. They had deacons. They had elders. They had associates. You call it whatever you will. One of the reasons that I somewhat advocated, encouraged this change, the way our Constitution was set up, the form of government, the polity of Mandan Baptist Church, for the most part, the pastor was God, was king. Whatever he said went. And I know that's wrong. I didn't want to leave that when I left. Now, if you have a pastor who's totally in charge, and he's what some refer to as a benevolent dictator, fine, things go along well. But it opens the door for abuse. We need, desire, checks and balances. So I do believe, like, again, Scripture refers to elders that rule well. Some translations that lead well. There, I believe, is such a thing as leading, ruling elders. So you have one, or, you know, that kind of the cream rises to the top. But under him, there are those who have authority, have position, so forth. Excuse me. And this one individual that more or less guides, directs, and so forth, does not have blanket authority. One of the reasons that I've insisted that the pastor does not have the checkbook. Well, I could say a lot more. Time is running out. You've been patient with me. Some have had to leave, and I understand that. But I'm asking you to take it slow. I'm asking you to be patient with one another. Again, there are those who have the idea that this should be clear-cut, absolute, no ifs, ands, or buts about it, this way or the highway. I believe there's enough biblical evidence to encourage us, whatever works for you. Obviously, what works for a church of 100 or less like us is different than one that's got 1,000 or more. You do what works best. And I do believe that there needs to be some leadership under more or less the authority of one, but in no way, shape, or form are they in complete control. Whether you call it deacons, whether you call it elders, I could care less. But again, in 3 weeks, I'm gone. In 3 weeks, things are going to be different. We're not all on the same page. But Jesus' closing prayer, John 17, was all about unity. Not compromise, but unity. And that's what I'm pleading for. We can have our differences. And I don't see this all coming about as smoothly as I originally thought it would. And that's okay. We're all different. We have different opinions. There is a learning process. But I could have said a lot more, but for the sake of time, I've tried not to. As good as this pattern or plan that MacArthur puts out, I don't believe it's for everybody. And I don't believe it's perfect. I've showed a couple of portions out in that book where his own church doesn't practice what he wrote here. Why? Probably not practical. It may be an ideal, but it's just not practical. And so it is with us here.